Hey John, how are you, buddy?
I'm good, Dan. I decided I'm going to walk during this one because it's so beautiful in Chicago today.
I do not blame you one iota, buddy. You get yourself out in that vitamin D and you enjoy it. How's things been since you got back from Florida, buddy?
It's been really good.
Yeah. Yeah.
Greg has me on a new routine.
Yeah.
My Stanwix came in. My Swannies came in this week.
Okay.
And I noticed that on a few days that I've been on, my sleep score has gone up in my Garmin by about 5 to 10 points.
Yeah. For any reason in particular, or is that kind of just maybe just because you're changing over?
Maybe just changing over, it's now getting closer to 90.
Yeah.
It had been in the low 80s, but the last two have been like 88, 89.
Yeah. Which to all intents and purposes is still not a bad score, right? Kind of like l low high 80s, low 90s is still a pretty good score, but it could, like you said, it could be just a change in over. Obviously, I would imagine the weather over there in Chicago is getting a little bit better now as well, isn't it?
Yeah, and then I started setting an alarm for 8 months after I, eight hours after I go to bed, so that if I wake up to go pee, I'm not tempted to see what time it is,
Yeah,
that I can
yeah.
have an alarm tell me that, oh, you met your minimum.
Yeah. I think the psychological aspect of sleep is quite a difficult one because I know I'm terrible for that in regards to sometimes I wake up. It's very rare, but you wake up and the first temptation is to check what time it is and essentially kind of how long you've got left to sleep, right?
Especially if it's a day that I have to be up early.
Yes, yeah.
Like there's there on Tuesdays, I have to be up an hour earlier than any other day
Yeah.
because I try to get up at 7, but
Yeah.
I do some coaching at a local high school where I have to be that's about an hour commute, and
Yeah.
that starts at 8 o'clock, so I have to leave at the time I usually get up.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a difficult one. I always say with sleep with my guys, kind of I look at sleep two prongs. So I look at it kind of mechanically. So kind of that's like your sleep hygiene, your routine, your schedule, and kind of all the things that we can actively do. And then I look at psychologically because I know that a lot of the time, and you guys have heard me speak quite often about psychology and the brain, kind of just being able to calm that brain, especially I always think when there's a pressure of getting up extra early, like for you on a Tuesday, or you've gone to bed with something that's taxing for the next morning, which is why you've heard me say so many times, kind of pre-bed, just kind of getting everything out of the system. So whether it be writing lists to do in the morning, but most importantly, but I always say sleep is two-pronged. You can have the best mechanics when it comes to sleep in regards to sleep hygiene routine, but if you're not adequately kind of clearing your brain of not clutter, you could say clutter of everything that is contained prior to sleep, it can always play have an impact of how restful that sleep is as well.
Yeah, and in terms of trends, according to my Garmin, prior to muscle camp, I'd gone through a number of weeks where my HRV was really low,
Yeah.
and my resting heart rate was higher than it had been in a long time,
Yeah.
and by the second day of muscle camp, my HRV had started to go up,
Yeah.
and my resting heart rate by the end of muscle camp went below 60, and it's only hit 60 once since then, and now it's getting
Yeah.
closer to the lower 50s, which is
Yeah.
what I would have expected. So
Yeah.
there's a good respite for me.
Yeah, 100%. And kind of I noticed with a lot of my guys that were at the camp, kind of because the reality with the camp and anything with because there's so much training involved as well with us training kind of 4 to 6 times over the two or 3 days. Obviously, recovery is less than optimal. Obviously, people are in new environments, whether you're staying in a boat like Chris or kind of you're staying in a hotel. Environments are off, and then you add in the training stimulus, you add in everything else. And I found with a few of my guys that the kind of recovery was a little bit impaired the few days after. I gave most of my guys 2 days off after camp just to allow their body to kind of almost reset. So it was interesting that your HRV went up and resting heart rate went down kind of midway through the camp, which is only a good sign as well. It's only a good sign as well.
And I wasn't drained from the camp at all.
And that, and that's what I say. It's probably physiologically from overtaxing with the camp, but the training, how we try to structure the training, is very much mitigating fatigue and kind of giving you just enough to stimulate. And the reality is, you're not doing a whole host of working sets, but kind of trying to minimize fatigue alongside kind of the structural way we want to kind of encourage recovery as much as possible with us training so often as well.
I mean, you guys pushed us to really maximize our reps, but I didn't feel like I was pushed or drained any more than I would have been on a regular training day.
Which is good, which, as you're going to hear in my talk tonight, kind of less is often more. And part of the slides tonight is talking about training and kind of a lot of, we all know, we've all been in the industry long enough to know that kind of old thesis of train more and the bro science of just do more, just do more. But in regards to the ecosystem of a body, training and overreaching can sometimes be worth an underreaching. So making sure we structure the program around minimizing fatigue was how we worked it, which it seemed to have fell well with a lot of you guys, which is always good as well.
So yeah, I was really happy I was at camp.
Good. Was happy to have you, mate, and we'll see you at the next one. So yeah, you enjoy your walk anyway and enjoy the sun that Chicago's got as well, buddy. Hey,
Yeah,
Lewis. Hey, Paul. Hey, Jared. Chris, how are you boys? You all okay? Nice to see you all. As you me and John just chewing the fat around kind of sleep recovery, and kind of John was just talking about kind of how his recovery is really good since the muscle camp. And you guys probably jumped in as we're just talking about the importance of sleep and kind of just understanding, which I'm going to talk a little bit tonight in regards to management of stress around sleep. So I'll get, well, what are we? Just gone 5 past. Yeah. So we'll kick straight into it, guys. We'll go with you five to start with. If anyone joins, I'll just let them in. So as I mentioned a second ago, tonight's very much around kind of mastering stress and reclaiming control. So how you guys that know me well enough now know that psychology, the brain, and kind of recovery is very important parts of kind of the continuum. So what I'm going to use tonight to do is just explore stress a little bit more. So I'm going to bring back the stress bucket analogy that I spoke about at camp, but also in my previous talk. And just looking at the kind of biology of stress, kind of how it happens, where it comes from, and most importantly, as you guys, how you guys can start to mitigate stress when it comes to the journeys that you're on. I often talk about stress and the importance of stress because I read a report somewhere that it's kind of they've started to call it the silent killer, where kind of we live in a world nowadays where we're not void of stress. And I think the important thing is when we talk about the stress bucket in a second, it's not to totally try to get rid of stress, but very much understanding how we can control it and the strategies we can use essentially to start to mitigate the stresses that you're under. Because everybody on this call, you're all under different types of stress. If I was to sit down and break down each and every one of you in regards to the stresses that you're under at this moment in time, you'd all be under something very different. So it's, I think the thing with stress for me is, and understanding it from a setup with my guys, is a lot of people are overly stressed, but how I'd categorize that is you don't have a stress problem. For me, it's very much you have, the problem you have is a stress capacity problem, because in a normal ecosystem of the body, stress isn't the enemy. Okay, the systems that are within it are probably the things that are causing us to overreach, overwhelm, and kind of all the negative things that are associated with stress. So quite often I hear a lot of coaches talk about, and I hear a lot of people talk about kind of reducing stress or avoiding stress, escaping stress. But in my opinion, that's typically why they stay stuck, because yes, there is, for me, essential, non-essential stress. But if we can increase your capacity and your tolerance around stress, the big thing to my point now is stress no longer controls you and you control it. So the strategies that you use when undoubtedly you are going to feel stress or stress is going to hit the system, your ability to control it is going to far outweigh trying to get rid of it. Because, as I said a second ago, kind of it's impossible. It's impossible to go through life with any form of stress and understanding our body's response to stress. So I always say, from a stress perspective, kind of stress is going to be typically any demand that's placed on your system. So a lot of people associate stress with something mentally, but it's training is a stress and should be an acute stressor. Work is a stress. Lack of sleep or not getting the full quota of or the few full duration of quality sleep can stress the system. Alcohol, even undereating, or you're spending a prolonged period in a dieting phase, which is leaning towards your goal, but it's still going to stress the body. So all stress is not made equal. And effectively, your body doesn't care where stress comes from. It all goes into the same bucket. The body doesn't have the ability to decipher between essential, non-essential, important, non-important stress. The actual physiology of the stress response is it will remain the same. So I always use the analogy, whether I'm being pinched or I'm being chased by the road by a lion, internally, that stress response is still going to be the same across the board. So how I like to categorize it for those of you guys that haven't heard me speak about it before is I talk about it in relation to a stress bucket. Okay, so every man and every one of us on this call and listening to this call has a bucket or your capacity, which is your current load of stress. And when that bucket overflows, and if we talk about the word, which I'm not a massive fan of the word overwhelm, because I believe overwhelm itself isn't a true word. It's just a lack of preparation, lack of planning, lack of structure. But when kind of that current load or that stress bucket has overflowed, what sort of things can happen that are a kind of attributed to your journey? So fat loss can stall, hormonally, testosterone can drop. Sleep again could start to kind of drop a little bit because if you're highly stressed, your ability to kind of calm yourself down is going to be null and void. Things like emotion spikes, so temper, kind of fear, anxiety, all those sort of feelings are kind of ramped up when this essentially that bucket is full. So what people typically do and make the mistake of is they keep adding stress to the system, whereas what we want to do is kind of understand the stress, but more so kind of increase the capacity and just kind of being able to itemize and have strategies in place that are going to help you re in reality. And I'm going to talk about it in slides, so I'm going to jump forward and then jump back. Is stress is related to the nervous system, right? Primarily. So I'm going to talk about the biology in a second, but ultimately it's a sympathetic and parasympathetic branches of your nervous system. The fight or flight system is your sympathetic, which is when everything's ramped up, and then you've got your parasympathetic. When somebody is stressed, they spend a whole heap of time in that sympathetic drive. So when I talk about expanding the bucket or increasing that capacity, all I'm talking about is having strategies from the parasympathetic realm to bring you from sympathetic dominance to parasympathetic dominance. So when you hear me talk about the stress bucket and increasing capacity, it's not increasing the size of anything kind of that we can actually have a role in, but it's very much increasing and having strategies in place that are going to lead towards that kind of calming, rest and digest side of your nervous system, as opposed to continually trying to kind of hammer away at the sympathetic. And I think it's important to understand that, like I've said with stress, is there's necessary and unnecessary kind of, and an example kind of getting mad at get which we've all been guilty of it. We can all hold our hands up at this, and I'm probably deflecting a little bit from my own experience. But I was a very angry driver. Kind of, I used to get, I say road rage, that sounds quite dramatic, but I used to get frustrated on the road all the time at traffic. Traffic's a big one. Obviously, here in Nottingham, where I'm in the UK, traffic's a nightmare. There's temporary roadworks absolutely everywhere in the city. And old Dan would have typically got frustrated by kind of getting caught in traffic. But I forget who was it that said I spoke to somebody. I heard somebody say something. It was a celebrity somewhere. Basically, he gave the analogy that kind of if you get mad at traffic and you're part of that traffic, you're actually part of the problem. And I thought about it and I was like, yeah, well, if I'm sat in the traffic, I'm actually part of that problem. So what is there to stress about? And when I talk about kind of important stress and non-important stress, if you've got work pressures, that's important. You've got family stresses with people like Lewis, obviously, for caring for your wife and the ailments that she's been going for at the minute. They're all necessary stresses because you've got to be there and it's something that's necessary. Whereas kind of simple things that I spoke about in regards to getting mad at a set of temporary traffic lights, it's not essential. So when I talk about kind of moderating stress and understanding the stuff we want within the system, we want things like training stresses and to be testing our body acutely in a training environment. We want the pressures of a deadline for work. We want the pressures of kind of running a family or kind of being the patriarch of your family. They're all stresses that I think build that durability and build the kind of resiliency in that the kind of physiological resiliency that we talk about in the four resiliencies model. So when we talk about stress, it's never trying to get rid of it. It's just making a choice as a human of what's necessary and what's not necessary, and then being able to have strategies in place to essentially control that stress. So when we look at the biology of stress, if we try to look at it in regards to kind of how it happens, so a few of you may have heard of the HPA axis, but essentially the HPA axis is your body's stress command system. Okay, so essentially when stress comes into the system, it creates a chain reaction between your hypothalamus, your pituitary, and your adrenal glands. Okay, and it's almost has a downstream effect. So kind of what happens within that system when stress comes in? So more often than not, and hear me when I say this, is 9 times out of 10, stress is perception. Stress is something that we think of. It's not actually real. It's something that we perceive is happening a lot of the time that we over magnify and kind of create a whole new kind of theory around. So understand that when we talk about the stress response and what happens within that, we perceive stress. Okay, so it could be a workout, could be work pressure, could be lack of sleep. So there are examples of perceiving stress. The hypothalamus itself would initially send a signal, which will allow the body to release a hormone called CRH, which is corticotropin releasing hormone, which then kind of passes on a message to that pituitary gland. And then at the pituitary gland, again, that chemical messenger will tell the pituitary gland to release ACTH into the bloodstream, which ACTH is just adrenocorticotropic hormone. Okay. And then the adrenals are the last part of that continuum, which will respond. And they're going to release and pump out adrenaline, cortisol, and all the cofactors of that linear there. So the role of a stress response, as it's the clues in the name, is to fight or flight. Okay. So what will happen kind of internally in your body is typically all the after that, the adrenals respond, they release that cortisol and adrenaline, all the blood is funneled out to the extremities to allow you to escape as quick as possible. So that's kind of blood going to the extremities digestively as well. Everything starts to clear out. So again, I'm going to use a personal story here, which will be funny or not, but I'm, believe it or not, naturally an introvert. Okay. So I'm an introverted by trade. And obviously, being in the personal training industry for 22 years, I've done a lot of public speaking. I've ran very successful worldwide education companies. And one of my kind of almost, it's not a limitation because I've become comfortable. It's things like this tonight. Okay, I feel very uncomfortable presenting. I've done it for the last 12, 15 years of my life, but every time I go to present, I get nervous. My stress response ramps up because, believe it or not, kind of it's not something that comes totally natural to me. It's something that takes a lot up. And I remember when I used to present kind of one in groups of people and get up on stage, I would typically have a nervous poop before I went on stage. And that's just another example of kind of what happens to your body when you're feeling stressed. So any of you guys that are under high stress and toilet habits, stools are off, and kind of you find yourself having to rush off to the toilet, that's an example that that stress response is really high because all that's happening is your body's trying to clear everything to make you as light as possible to allow you to escape or flee the stress that you've perceived at the start of that continuum. So again, just to recap, kind of when you perceive stress, and again, it could be anything that you perceive, the hypothalamus sends a signal that releases a CRH down to the pituitary gland, which then gets a message and subsequently releases ACTH into the bloodstream, which then at which point the adrenals respond and cortisol and adrenaline released. So the result of that, as we've just mentioned, is energy goes up, blood sugar goes up, focus typically and pupil dilation will widen in, so you're focused in, so you're a lot more laser focused, which subsequently means things like recovery and growth get put on hold. So you can see within that kind of continuum there, when you're spending prolonged periods in a very stressed state, recovery and growth get put on hold. So when it comes to fat loss, what's one of the biggest mitigating things when it comes to fat loss? It's recovery, and it's allowing your body to reach that relative homeostasis, right? When it comes to growth, and any of you guys that are trying to build muscle, which is, let's face it, is all of us, if that stress response is too high and kind of that kind of essentially blood sugar's high, kind of cortisol's ramped up alongside adrenaline, your ability to kind of grow is going to be diminished as well. So although in short periods, kind of the system itself and the stress response is designed for short bursts, but when it stays on all day and cortisol is elevated,
Dan, you're frozen.
John.
Sorry, guys, my signal literally just cut straight out then. Apologies, apologies. Let me just, Jesus Christ. Yay. Apologies, guys. Let me just share my screen again. Dan and technical things aren't the greatest of friends at any given time, but I didn't expect my internet to cut out at 11:23 p.m. That's what I didn't expect. So apologies, guys. So let me just move you guys off my screen so I can see these slides. Oops. Can everybody see that okay? Just give me a thumbs up, Lewis, because I can see you on my screen. Perfect, buddy. Yeah. So sorry about that. Took me totally off my flow. So essentially, yeah, the system itself is designed for short bursts. So trying to mitigate that and having the trade-off. I always use the example with my guys. If you want some facts and figures in regards to how much your day should be sympathetic, how much should be parasympathetic, by my reckoning, we'd want probably 20 to 30% of your day with sympathetic drive involved, and then anywhere between kind of 70 and 80% of your day parasympathetic. And we can be damn sure everybody on this call, myself included, doesn't spend 70 to 80% of their day in parasympathetic drive. So again, it's having strategies in laid to ensure that becomes a thing. So that's the biology around kind of stress. So what I wanted to talk about next is kind of cortisol, because cortisol gets a good and a bad rep. Like everybody talks about elevated cortisol being a bad thing, being kind of something that we want to stave away from. But the reason why cortisol gets a bad rap, the same as stress, is we need it as part of a system. Okay, it's not bad. When it's chronically elevated, it can be our enemy. But in short, sharp bursts, cortisol is essential to this to allow the internal systems to work optimally. So obviously, when we look at cortisol, we typically want cortisol to be highest in the morning upon waking, right? So natural circadian rhythm, we want to be waking up with a nice kind of boost of cortisol, and then as we get to kind of mid-morning, it peaks, and then towards the latter part of the day, it comes down. So, from a circadian rhythm perspective, an optimal circadian rhythm and a cortisol curve is super important and beneficial for the system, but a chronically elevated one isn't. Okay, so cortisol itself, its responsibility is for waking us up. Okay, so those of you guys who have had poor sleeping patterns and had history of kind of waking up at 4 a.m. every day or 5 a.m. every day when kind of your alarm doesn't go off till 7 and you're wide awake. That could be an example that there's a kind of mismatch in that circadian rhythm and cortisol is just a little bit higher, a little bit early in the morning, which is where we don't want it. Okay, but we require an elevated cortisol to kind of train hard. But also from a fat perspective, we also want kind of cortisol to be a good circulating cortisol to burn fat. Okay. The downside to cortisol and where it gets its bad rep. And I mean, it was 6, 12 months ago on social media, you saw all these kind of ladies drinking teas that were reducing cortisol first thing in the morning, which is totally goes away from the normal ecology and kind of how the biology of a body should work. And they're trying to reduce cortisol, but ultimately, kind of, it gets a bad rep because chronically, we know that it increases fat storage, it disrupts sleep, it suppresses things like testosterone and kind of can break down muscle. But I think it got such a bad rap not too long ago simply because the reality is the world that we live in and the people within it are chronically stressed. We live in a chronically mismanaged world where people are chronically stressed. And going back to the first slide around the stress bucket, people haven't got the tools required to mitigate and minimize that stress. So our body itself kind of will and always will prioritize survival over performance. So if stress is high, we know that testosterone is going to tank. Things like your thyroid is going to tank because it's just pumping out kind of cortisol and adrenaline. So it starts to kind of be suppressed. And then lo and behold, recovery, sleep, and all those sort of things are kind of brought down with it simply because your body thinks that it's under threat. And remember, the body's primary role is preservation, right? So if a body feels like it's under threat, building muscle, losing fat is not a priority for your body. The natural role of your body is that preservation, is homeostasis, is balance. So when your body's in that stress state and it's you're asking it to flee, building muscle and losing fat isn't a priority. So there is always a hormonal trade-off. So when we look at stress, it's important not just to look at it external and kind of what we're thinking about. It's understanding that stress affects a lot more within the system than expressively out, because you can still train, you can still eat your food. A lot of people can still sleep, but it's the effects that it's having internally that's more the issue that we need to be aware of and we need to dampen as we start to move forward. So just understanding the stress itself is important and kind of how to mitigate that. So the next slide is what I've started to allude to earlier on is the two parts or the two states of the nervous system. So we have got the kind of ANS, so we've got a third branch to the nervous system, but the ones that are more likely responsible for stress and being stressed and not being stressed are the sympathetic and parasympathetic. So as mentioned earlier, your sympathetic is your kind of flee, fight or fight. And then your parasympathetic is your rest and digest. Okay, so your sympathetic, again, to go back to what I said earlier, is very much when you're stressed to give you drive to improve performance. So we want a certain amount of your day to be sympathetic dominant, but we want it to be at the right time. We don't want it to be as you're about to go to bed in the evening. We don't want it to be when you're sitting down to do breath work or you're sitting down to eat. Because if you're sitting down to eat and your body's stressed, what did I say happens to the digestive system when we're stressed? It clears out. So your body's ability in that first phase of digestion, which typically will be kind of producing salivatory fluids to help break down the protein in that first phase of digestion, if your body's stressed, that instantly is going to be mitigated. So that initial phase of digestion of producing those salivatory fluids are not going to be there. So from a very first ingestion, your body's not going to be in a position to take the food. So that's why I talk to a lot of my guys about being present when they eat, spending a little bit of time doing a little bit of breath work prior to eating, just so their body's in the correct state to be able to receive the food that's about to be given, because digestion is a massive part of the continuum. When we look at stress, if you're not adequately chewing or semi-liquidizing your food and your food is going down your gullet in big, large chunks, that, guess what? That adds stress to the system. So it's understanding that stress is not just one thing. There is so many different things within the realm that stress is derived by, and just being kind of aware of that, of what you can control and what you can do better to mitigate that, is super important. So as the sympathetic is for kind of stress, drive, and performance, the parasympathetic is more for healing, digestion, growth. Typically, most men I see live kind of in that sympathetic drive. So they're always switched on. They never recover. And typically, that's why results stall, because I'm sure you know of somebody, or it might be you, that you feel like you're doing everything right. So you're eating the calories that your coach has given you, you're training effectively, and your weights are going up, but your weight's just not budging. It's understanding that that simple equation that's banded around on social media of, oh, fat loss is just as simple as calories in, calories out. It's not. Because going back to the first slide, any longer periods of undereating add stress to the system, because remember, it's trying to get to that relative homeostasis and that balance. So spending a long period in a dieting phase actually stresses the system, which is going to impair. So that's why results kind of can stall when there is too much circulating stress within the system itself. So if you I haven't told you by now, stress is just such a, and being able to control stress is such a big part of kind of what we want to kind of have a handle on. And it is something that is so easy to be aware of and have an awareness of, that's going to kind of help us positively move forward. So kind of, I mean, the hidden stresses that people typically think that are killing their results. Often people think their stress is primarily derived by work, sometimes family, responsibility. Again, they do have factors, but that's only part of the equation. In my opinion, from a stress position, the real culprits and the things that we can have a handle on, that we can micromanage, that we can turn into potential strength, is things like poor sleep, blood sugar instability, inflammation, sorry, environmental toxins, overtraining, undereating. All of these are going to have a prominent role in elevating stress hormones in a chronic manner. Remember, we want stress to be acute, not chronic. And the reality is, if we're adding three or four of those together, you're inflamed, you're overreaching when it comes to your training, and then you're under recovering or under eating. Those kind of put together can be cataclysmic in regards to the size of the stress that's then produced off the back of that. And kind of, you can see where results will slow or potentially not happen if there is a large part of stress across the system. So quite often I see, and I've obviously been around gyms for a number of years, I've spent a lot of time around the bros and the meatheads. Okay. So a lot of guys that I used to speak to, they used to pride themselves on sleeping 5 or 6 hours, training like beasts, kind of topping themselves up on three, four, five coffees a day. They used to think they were disciplined, and kind of they run by that kind of adage, that kind of that more is more, which I spoke about earlier on. But the reality is, you think you did, they think they were disciplined, but their body, from an internal aspect, is barely surviving. So understanding and respecting the internal nature and kind of having all the pieces of the puzzle together is super important when kind of looking at stress unequivocally and making sure that everything kind of runs very smoothly and kind of is together. Because the same as everything, things compound very quick. And for me, kind of, I'm sure if we go back to the last slide of kind of the things that people, the real info, there's probably a lot of us sat here that could get a better sleep, that potentially does have a little bit of blood sugar instability or inflammation is potentially under eating. So those all put together can be kind of quite stressful. And then you add on the family, the busy job, the kind of everything in regards to the external stress, then that's where kind of not initially, but over time, it just starts to wear the body down and it starts to move it further away from that homeostasis or that balance where it likes to live. So, in my opinion, kind of we don't just kind of manage stress. We build that resilience that I spoke about earlier on in the call across four main domains. So I've tried to categorize them together, the four types of stress that I believe that we all need to master. So the first, a bit like the resiliency model that we've spoken about previous, is physical stress. So physical stress is your training, your movement, your recovery. So for me, it's very much around building capacity without breaking the system when it comes to the physical realm. So you guys are all on training programs, you've all got coaches, you'll see that kind of how the total volume and whether you're on a periodization style program, but there'll be different phases of program that lean into slightly higher volume, slightly less volume, and certain different areas. Because what we try to manage and what I try to manage as a coach is mitigating that fatigue. Whereas if I just hammered someone 5 times a week consecutively for 16 weeks, and they've got a full-time job, they've got a house to run, and all those sort of things, it's overreaching. It's overreaching. So from a capacity perspective, is looking at training and movement and recovery objectively to the position you find yourself in your life. And how I was on a kickoff call today, and I was talking to a new client of mine that's from Australia, but is currently in Japan on a ship. It works in oil and gas. And his fear was kind of, right, how many times are you going to have me training? What have I got to do for food? And by the end of the call, my question to him was, do you feel that everything that I've asked of you from a training nutrition plan, you can get in? And he said, yes. And I said, is that because I've built it around everything you've got going on for the next few weeks while on the ship? He's like, yes. And that's what I talk about in regards to building kind of capacity without breaking the system, is knowing what you're capable of, looking at the functional capacity that we spoke about previously, and not trying to overreach. And if you've only got the capacity to get 3 or 4 sessions in a week because something takes priority, then that's where we've got to lie, and we maximize those 3 or 4 sessions without being forced to do 5, 6 sessions if you haven't got the time. But that's not to say that we're shirking on it and we're putting it to the bottom of the pile. It's still a high priority, but it's just being able to kind of build that capacity. Then we move on to something like chemical stress, which will typically be nutrition or food. It's going to be things like alcohol, which most of you guys don't drink, toxins and inflammation. Okay, so inflammation itself is going to disrupt cellular function and affect hormones, which we spoke about earlier in regards to testosterone, thyroid, and those sort of things. So managing inflammation and the inflammation that's pertained from certain environmental factors or chemicals is super important. So that's food. We don't just eat. Well, I'd never say good or bad food. It's congruent or non-congruent food. The reason why we want you to eat congruent food is, yes, for a goal. Yes, it's for fat loss. Yes, it's for muscle building or whatever phase you find yourself in. But it's also managing inflammation. It's also helping aid cellular function, natural hormonal expression, and those sort of things. So if you do find yourself kind of when you're under a lot large period of stress, reaching for the wrong things, just understand that for that 2 minutes or that 5 minutes that you have it, it may serve your dopamine. It'll give you a dopamine push. But internally, with what it's driving from a inflammatory cytokine perspective, is not great. And all it's doing is adding more stress to the system. So it just gives you an extra reason in regards to doubling down on the things that you know you should be doing, even in the most stressful time, or kind of when shit hits the fan, basically. Moving into the next one is more emotional. So emotional is very much perception. You guys have heard me speak about perception. Most stress is perception. So I always use the analogy kind of two people in the same situation will always elicit a different outcome. So I would imagine, and I might be wrong here, Lewis, but using my analogy of driving and getting stuck behind traffic lights, I'd be the type of guy that kicks off and starts throwing a tantrum and sticking my dummy out. But I can imagine, well, yourself and Paul, I'd say, of what I've got to know, you guys are a little bit cooler. You guys will probably deal with that same situation a little bit different to me. And the one thing that it comes down to is one thing, it's perception. That's it. There's no difference. We are two different beings biologically, but ultimately it's our perception of said stress. Because obviously, with what you've had going on, Lewis, at home and all those stresses, they far outweigh any sort of little bit of traffic that you're sticking. So to me, traffic, because there's not massive amounts of stress within my day-to-day life, might seem like a huge thing for me. Whereas for you, compared to the other stresses that you've got going, it'll be like, oh, I'm happy to be sitting in stress for half an hour. This is the least of my worries. So understanding that, kind of managing the emotional situation and understanding what serves you and what doesn't. And you guys have heard me speak about it so often in regards to the biggest thing around emotional and perception is you're in control of absolutely everything. There's nothing, no one, or anything within the realm that can affect your emotional state unless you allow it to. You choose to. Nobody can piss you off. Nobody can annoy you unless you allow them to. So perception essentially drives response. And just understanding, is there areas in your life that your senses are a little bit heightened, you struggle a little bit more with? So for me personally, as an example for that, those of you guys that have heard me speak, I like certainty. Like for me, when I'm thrown into an uncertain situation and there's no structure, there's no routine, I struggle a lot. I struggle a lot. So to facilitate my perception and reducing my stress, anytime I'm going with, as an example, the camp, I spoke to Gab before I left, right, what's the structure for the days? Have we got everything nailed down? So I flew out to Tampa knowing exactly what we were doing every hour and every day. That reduced my stress massively. If I'd have flew out there and I'd have been speaking to Gav and Greg on the day that we got there, I know on the flight over to Tampa, my senses would have been just been r rampant through the roof. So understanding oneself from the emotional side is super important as well. And then the last part of well, the last four, one of the four parts of stress that I want you guys to kind of master is psychological. And you guys heard me speak about it on the last call, is it's your ability to walk towards the hardship. It's your ability to face that discomfort and not shy away from it. Take action, lead yourself from an identity perspective, live your life and be the person that you're designed and you want to be. So the psychological aspect of stress is very much your ability to face that discomfort and most importantly, take action and lead, whoever it be within your realm, friends, family, spouses, children, lead. And psychological is one that we can take a handle of. But knowing a lot of you guys personally now, it's an area that you guys don't struggle with, and you guys are dominating at the minute as well. Okay, so the last couple of slides are very much around kind of strategies. You know, I like to finish off any talks with strategies. So typically, I've given a few principles in regards to how I believe how high performers actually handle stress. So going back to what I said in regards to the psychological, they don't avoid stress, they build systems. Okay, so how can we build systems? So again, the principles that I've chosen is increasing the size of the bucket. That's self-explanatory. I spoke about that earlier. It's that ability to kind of be able to handle and have strategies in place when that stress undoubtedly hits the bucket, we're able to mitigate it very quickly. So increasing the size of the bucket is one of the principles that high performers typically do. Principle two is very much balancing that stress and recovery. We know obviously stress plus recovery equals growth. Stress minus recovery increases breakdown. So going back to what we said previously, stress is imperative. It's important. It's part of a functionally optimized system. It's required. But again, without recovery and singularly without recovery, it's actually more of a breakdown tool. So remember, acute and chronic are the two parts of stress. We want acute stress within the system. We don't want chronic. Okay. And when there's no recovery within the system, then we know that that stress is going to turn a little bit more chronic than it is acute. Whereas if we've got some stress. We balance it out with recovery. We've got acute stress here, and that leads to an equals growth as opposed to breakdown, where we don't want it to go. And then the last one is simply control out inputs. Okay, so it's taking ownership. And one of the biggest things that people do is have a structure, have systems, but have an operating system. And basically, how I look at kind of controlling inputs is it's moving away from trying to control life. Because for me, going back to what I said about certainty and uncertainty, for so many years have I watched men kind of try to create certainty in uncertain situations, which is a fallacy because it's not possible, because those uncertain situations rely on a another. So it might be a spouse, it might be a child, it might be a friend, it might be something else. So you're actually that kind of uncertainty that you're trying to create certainty is impossible because you're not in control of it because it relies on someone else. So how I reverse engineer this is rather than trying to control life and creating certainty in uncertain situations, what are the things you can control? Sleep structure and sleep hygiene, nutrition, training, environment, and the environment you curate 9 times out of 10. So they're all things. So it's not trying to control life itself and trying to, as I said, create that certainty in the uncertainty. It's controlling all the factors that pertain to you living the best quality life as possible. And by focusing on those main four factors and the other factors in regards to sleep, stress, digestion, and those sort of things, everything else becomes a lot clearer. So we have that ability to control the inputs within our life, and that's all within your realm. It doesn't require reliance on anybody else. It doesn't reliance on anything other than yourself, which a powerful place to be is taking ownership in every situation, good, bad, and the ugly. I'm a big believer in taking ownership, and kind of by controlling those inputs are going to be super important and going away way to that. So the last slide today is very much around kind of a tactical playbook, I've called it, but just some things that you guys already know about what we should be doing. So starting with the most important thing, and you guys hear me bang on about this on, it feels like pretty much on every call. So apologies for those of you guys that are here every week, but fix your sleep. Okay. So if your sleep is broken, everything is broken, in my opinion. Okay. Simply because kind of sleep is an important part of the continuum. So remember when I spoke about the different phases of sleep. So awake, light, REM, and deep sleep. Okay. Remember when I said we want 20 to 25% of each deep and REM, no matter what time, the breadth of time that you sleep. We want 20 to 25% of every sleep to contain that to be contained in deep sleep and REM for a few reasons, because deep sleep is going to drive recovery. So remember recovery being one of the important factors that takes stress from chronic to acute. It drives recovery, it drives optimizing hormones, and most importantly, brain function. You guys hear me talk about the brain all the time. So deep sleep is going to drive three main factors: recovery, hormones, and brain function. Whereas REM sleep is going to allow you to regulate your emotions and your cognition. So again, if REM is going to help regulate your emotions, what's that going to do? Is if you're a bit more controlled over your cognition, your emotions, and then deep sleep is driving brain function, what is that going to do to perception? It's going to improve your perception massive. So if you're recovered and your brain's kind of cooking on gas, your belief around something that would typically be super stressed when you're stressful when you're tired might not seem half as bad if you're doing the right things when it comes to recovery to allow the systems to function optimally. Again, the second point, regulate that nervous system daily. So simple hacks for bringing down that parasympathetic dominance. You heard me speak about kind of nasal breathing earlier. I'm a big fan of not just doing breathe, because a lot of people do breath work for 30 to 40 minutes a day. Okay. I'm a big believer that doing breath work across the breadth of the day is important. I will typically do it prior to meals. Like Gav said at the camp, I tend to do it when I'm on a dog walk, if I'm doing my cardio. So I'll pick multiple points across the day because I know that I'm quite an adrenaline derived individual. My genetics are, I'm quite adrenaline kind of led. and it only takes a second for everything to drive up. So by putting multiple points in a day where I do a little bit of breath work, again, I think I may have told this story before, but I typically do breath. I'm a sit down kind of week, sit down wee kind of guy. I typically will do, it's the only time I get to myself where the dog's not chasing me around the house. So when I go to the toilet, I have a sit down wee, I take a minute or two and I do some breath work. So just some kind of nasal breathing just to calm that system, because I know being on this call tonight, I'm hyper-stimulated now. I come off these calls and my eyes are like kind of super wide. And obviously, it being midnight here, I struggle to relax. So, breath work comes in. So, just calming that system in situations that are relevant to yourselves that allow you to just bring yourself back down. So, nasal breathing, slow exhale. So, a bit of box breathing. So, kind of four in, four hold, 8 second exhale. So, 4 seconds in, 4 second hold. 8 second exhale is always good. So slow exhales. I'd say if you try to do it across the breadth of a day, 5 to 10 minutes a day, this is going to help bring you into that parasympathetic dominance. That's going to help calm that nervous system. And especially in periods where you do get a little bit heightened and things drive up, use it to great effect and it'll be your best friend. And the next point is train smarter, not harder. We touched on that a little bit earlier. More is often not better. Okay, my belief is better, and just training as much as your system will allow. But as we said, for those of you guys that run a camp, giving yourself everything that you've got within the 45 minutes or an hour you've got. We're not shirking, we're not half-assing a workout. You're deciding and you're being objective with, right, I've got four sessions this week. For that 4 hours, I'm going to absolutely dominate it in all areas: execution, strength, my ability to push. And then recover from it. So it's for me training smarter and not harder, and just making sure that the overall total volume that you're eliciting when it comes to a training perspective, you're able to recover from. So we don't just want to be surviving and we're doing sessions for the sake of it. Gav told the story when we was on the camp around Thompson, around kind of making him having a couple of rest days when it comes to the challenges, because he could see his recovery drop. So John was talking about his Garmin just before the call, but using a wearable to measure your HRV, resting heart rate are all good surefire signs to ensure that you're recovering from a training stimuli that's put into the system. The next one, stabilize blood sugar. I'm a big fan of kind of protein and fats early on in the day. I'm a big fan of partitioning carbohydrates around workout so it can be utilized correctly, because we know kind of glycogen is going to be depleted during training. So obviously it's going to require to be replenished. So I like with a lot of my guys, from a management of blood sugar perspective in particular, to put a lot of carbs around my peri-workout window. So peri-workout is just pre, intra, and post. Okay. But if somebody's not training first thing in the morning, which a lot of you guys do, and they're training a little bit later, I do prefer a protein and fats breakfast, because again, from a satiety perspective, but with having protein and fats for breakfast, you're not going to get that dramatic spike. Because I find if somebody's not training and mitigating that spike, we can find that kind of blood sugar spike across the day and the cravings can go up and down. So what we want is a nice, smooth kind of blood sugar curve, with obviously your higher carbohydrate meals probably getting a little bit more of a peak. So stable energy is important, because you have stable energy, stable stress response. So it's just trying to avoid those constant spikes and just make sure that we've got ready available, and just being metabolically flexible as well, and being able to use both carbohydrates and fats for fuel where necessary. And then the last one is just reducing those invisible stresses that we spoke about earlier on. So alcohol, processed food, toxins, late night screens, and poor or shitty sleep hygiene, they all collectively together are going to slowly destroy recovery. They're not just going to happen over one night, but consistently. I talk to my guys so much about bedtime and about, again, sat here talking to you at 12 a.m. But most of the time, having a good bedtime and kind of maximizing the time of sleep, just again, going back to what I spoke about in regards to cortisol, just so you can start to manage that circadian rhythm. So you're waking up with the sun, you're waking up ready to go, ready to kind of kick ass. And having a, I think I've spoke about it on most calls, but kind of having a good sleep hygiene routine is probably the most important thing. But avoiding any sort of blue light late at night if it's not necessary, but definitely when it comes to alcohol and processed foods, that's always going to be a big thing as well. So kind of finishing collating that all together, for me, kind of closing, it's that identity shift, right? So you don't need a less stressful life. You need a stronger system. Okay. Stress, unfortunately, stress will always be there and it is part of life. And the stresses, I repeat, for every single one of us sat on this call or listening to the call are totally different. Okay. Stress will always be there. Pressure will always be there. Kind of what I want you guys to leave tonight with and move forward in your lives with is, are you the men that who break under it or the men that expands because of it? And kind of knowing that you have the tools within your arsenal to face every task head on and absolutely kick down that, I won't swear, but kick down the door, kind of you've got that within you. So for me, kind of it's not less stress, it's a stronger system. It's kind of understanding that kind of you kind of have that ability and the tools that your coach gives you, hopefully I give you as well, to just be able to handle, because not every life is made equal. And as I said, some of us on this call have dramatically more stress than others, but that's specific to your situation. How, what coping strategies can you use for your own particular kind of your own particular life and kind of what's going on within it? So for me, as I always do with every talk, is kind of like a final challenge, or this week again, just pick one. Fix your sleep if your sleep's the issue. Add daily breath work to meals. Sometimes sit down wheeze if you're a sit down wheeze, but add daily breath work. Remove one major stress and one unnecessary stress. Not everything, just one, and then execute it fully. So just put a simple strategy together this week just to maximize your week and then start to build that compound interest and keep everything moving forward. So again, this week, pick one, fix your sleep, add daily breath work or kind of box breathing or kind of longer exhales, remove one major stressor, not everything, just one that's not necessarily part of your system that's required to be there. And remember, it's all based on perception. So can we objectively look at and what's the one thing that stressed you out this week? That if you actually think about it in a different light and you sit down and break it down, is that's probably something that don't need to be within my system and to be something to be stressed about, and then just eliminate from the system. So just one. So that's me, guys. So kind of hopefully you guys enjoyed that. Is there any questions or any questions that you guys have got for me around that? Has anybody got anything that they want to share or anything they need any help with around that? No? Good. Well, you were muting Dale. You're trying to unmute Dale, aren't you? I can see you're trying to chew and unmute, like make up what your mind, what you're doing. Are you unmuting or are you chewing? Make your mind up, buddy. Go on.
Oh no, I got nothing.
You got okay. You looked like you was fiddling. Yeah, I could see you. He was chewing, and I was like, is he trying to unmute or is he chewing? But no. Nice to see you anyway, mate. Nice to see you.
Yeah, glad to see you're feeling better.
Yeah. Well, I'm 85% there, mate. As you'll probably see, I've not got my regulatory haircut or my beard cut, so I'm feeling a bit dishevelled at the moment. So I'm only a solid 8 out of 10 at the moment today, unfortunately. I'm not my usual 10 out of 10. Yeah,
Look a little shaggy.
little shaggy, mate. Exactly. But no, as always, guys, thank you for spending your hour with me today. Obviously, any questions around this, please let me know. Keep me updated. Obviously, I'll see you guys in a couple of weeks. And as always, you know where I am if you guys need anything and anything I can be a help with. But as always, thank you for joining tonight, and I look forward to seeing you all again soon. Take care, guys. Bye-bye.
You too, Dan.